Government Hour. This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about regrets or no regrets as it involves timing retirement or planning retirement or going into retirement. And to be with us here today are two retired feds from DOD, Vern Castle. And I should say Vern Castle not only as a guest, but he played a strong role in the success of NITP many, many years ago. Vern, tough, yeah. But fair. He says, Bob, this is what we expect, and will you do it? And I go, I'm not going to come in here and not do it. Anyway, good to see you, Vern.
Well, good to see you too, Bob.
And Bob Stacey, and both of you two worked together, if I'm not mistaken.
We did,
at one
yes.
point, yeah.
Yes.
And retired DOD, and John Elliott retired many agencies, right?
Yes. Half of it, though, was with the Office of Personnel Management, which will administer your retirement and insurance someday.
Yes.
For those of you who haven't retired yet.
Okay, and John is not only a retired Fed, but he's a fellow seminar presenter, a federal benefits strategist. I think that's what you would prefer that I say.
Yeah, specialist sounds too government-y. I retired from the government.
Okay, and Ann Vincent, your mic isn't on. Good morning, Ann. Ann says good morning. She doesn't want to talk today, but we'll get her to talk, I hope. Anyway, so, guys, timing retirement. Now, not timing retirement as to whether it's January or February, but when you were looking at the glide path into retirement and you were picking a year or you were picking a time, how'd you do that? Did you look to do things in between the day you made the decision and when you pulled the trigger to do things into retirement? I don't know. I don't think I'll ever retire, so I'm going to be listening to you closely. Vern?
Well, I think when I came to retirement, it was I retired the 1st of May, year 2000. So I've been retired now for 10 years. And I would tell you, don't retire just because you're eligible. You know, if you enjoy your job, stay with it. It's very gratifying. And I didn't elect to retire the first date I was eligible. I waited a year and a half to retire after I was eligible for retirement. I looked around and I made some plans. So timing, I finally decided I know when it's time to retire.
And you're a dual retiree, are you not?
I am a dual retiree. I retired from the Air Force after 20 years. I bought my time back with the federal government, and then I retired from civil service. And I had a combined 39 years federal service.
Wow. Bob?
DOD was my whole career, no military experience, so my 32-plus years with DOD, I retired in February of 2008, and unlike Vern, as soon as I turned 55, that was always my goal to retire, but the timing for me is to those folks listening out there on the show today is ask yourself, are you really ready? And that encompasses a lot of things, both physically, are you ready? And more importantly, mentally, are you ready? And financially, if you're ready. After I took up NITP's pre-retirement course, that gave me a lot of things to talk about, to think about, ask former retirees, ask my mother who worked for DOD for 20 plus years, to just ask those questions on how I can best manipulate my time, my retirement date, and the timing of when you want to do it. So for me, while I retired soon after I turned 55, I knew doing my homework, if you will, both financially I could afford to do it, and mentally I was ready. And anybody who commutes in the traffic of D.C., the quicker you can leave that traffic and be at home and hear the news reports about traffic instead of encountering it every single day, that's always a big plus. Physically, I became much healthier as soon as I retired, which was another benefit of my retiring at the right time.
Okay, but both of you work now in retirement, so it isn't that you just did the proverbial golf, etc., sailing. What got you into whatever you were going, whatever you're doing now?
Well, for me, I gave myself 2 years after retirement, and people, I think, have different aspects on: do they want to start work right away, part-time, full-time, volunteer, non-volunteer, the pay jobs. I decided to take a couple years off. After a couple years, I determined, of course, financially, was this working out for me as I had planned before I retired? And I felt you have a choice in retirement if the money is less to either spend less and or get another job. And I knew I was missing the work environment, and I knew I didn't want to work back at any job full time every day of the week, especially again in the D.C. area with the traffic. So when an opportunity this past February came up for me from a vendor that I used to work with at DOD, asked if I'd like to join her firm. And now I simply teach a supervisory course for defense Monday through Thursday, one time a month, which then does several things. It gets me back into the workforce, keeps my brain alert, physically alert, mentally alert. I get to see some of my old folks I used to work with at DOD, and I actually enjoy teaching, which is my other profession I had when I taught in high school English. So for me, it's a great opportunity to get back in the workaday world and not just sit at home, if you will, or play golf 365 days a year. I don't play golf anyway, so that wouldn't have worked. So for me, getting back in the classroom was very important because I'm a big extrovert. I like people. This was a great opportunity for me to get back into the workaday world without going to work every single day.
And Vern, you're involved with training, no?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. I mean, you were involved with training at DOD, but likewise do it in retirement.
I do it in retirement. Of course, when I first retired, I stayed out like Bob did for about a year, year and a half, and then I went to work with you and did some things with you for a few years, and then I moved. I moved out of the Washington, D.C. area down to Lynchburg, Virginia. So I commute back and forth between here and Lynchburg. But right now I'm doing consulting work with training. I go into companies and help them devise training plans and get them through some of the rough spots. So I still keep my finger in it, but I do a heck of a lot more traveling now, a lot more leisure than I did then. And my money situation, because I did the proper planning, is good right now, even in this economy. So I'm very fortunate that I did some pre-planning. Like Bob, I attended the three-day planning course, retirement planning course. But I also had the benefit of, while I was at my agency, that I got to look at evaluations of people who took the three-day planning course and saw what they liked, didn't like, the questions they asked. I sat in on many of the classes, so I got to hear an awful lot of the comments and the fears of people have when they get ready, when they're thinking about retirement. So I did a lot of planning in that phase of about 7 to 10 years getting ready for retirement.
And you made a comment in a, quote, green room before we came got in front of the mic. If somebody was looking at retirement today and they maybe had kids towards the end of their schooling or they didn't have kids, you were questioning whether they should be retiring so soon.
Well, yeah. In fact, the Post has a article in it today that I was looking at and just before I came in, and I saw that, you know, the economy, the way it is right now, people are really, their 401ks are faltering, their TSPs are faltering. I would have to seriously question whether this might be the right time. I'd have to really go through with my financial planner to make sure that I had all my ducks in a row before I would retire right now.
Yeah, I just... on the way into work, I was listening to some business radio show, and I guess the Fed is going to make a pronouncement today that it might go in and buy treasury bonds from the market, which would cut the interest rate on the long-term side. There isn't much to cut on the short-term side. There isn't anything to cut on the short-term side, but to cut it in the markets anticipating a rally. But I don't know how long. Listen, if I was so smart, I wouldn't be on the air. I'd be watching this ticker. But the point being is, like what Vern says, is times are tough, and they're just, you know, they're trying to resuscitate, and it's going to be hard. All righty, so timing of retirement. You looked at it, and you were fortunate enough to be around training, so you could pick people's brains. And what did you say, Vernon, a year and a half before you finally brought it in for the landing?
Yes.
Between the time that...
Yeah, I was on vacation that first year and a half, enjoying retirement and seeing what life was all about. But I did miss the continuity of working with government and being involved around people in government, and that is why I've stayed with the Training Officers Consortium, which allows me to stay with the training community, especially in federal government.
Yeah. John, you did the same thing, right?
I retired about 3 days after I was eligible. I knew exactly the date I was going to retire and didn't waver. I knew that date maybe 5 years out. But what I have found, I think more the exception rather than the rule, in that I think I'll hear people, or always heard people say, as soon as I'm eligible, I'm gone. Particularly the CSRS people, and invariably they're still there when that eligibility date comes. And take my wife. You're supposed to say, please, Bob.
Please.
Not me.
Anyway, well, the audience at the seminars does that, half the time anyway. Okay, back. But my wife was one of those, said, as soon as I'm eligible, I'm going to retire. Well, 2.5 years later, she finally retired. And a big part of it was, she worked for a nice agency to work for. Her boss loved her. And she had a great job, virtually free parking in the building, although I did too at the time I retired. But she said she would miss her friends, and that's a big aspect of it. Once you've got the finances in order, you know, you're not done with your analysis, and I recommend actually taking out a sheet of paper and listing pros and cons of should I stay or should I go now. And, you know, the negatives certainly are going to be things like commuting and some for some your boss, or I'm just bored. I was bored. And increasingly so was my wife. She was just sick of the type of work she had done for so many, many years in the government. And she'll never do it again.
Hope she's not listening.
She doesn't usually listen.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, no. I mean, I'm not telling anything she wouldn't tell you if she were here. And so, anyway, she finally pulled the plug, and she's very happy in retirement. I will say that. You know, and you're never sure if you're going to be happy. And she is not doing any work. Eventually, she thinks she may do volunteer work, but... who knows? But so far, she's just enjoying being at home and visiting her friends and so forth.
All righty. Vern, yes. Bob, fears that you had prior to, did they come true? Some? Were you anxious about things beforehand that proved to be something that you shouldn't have been anxious about, or you wish you'd spent more time being anxious about?
Actually, Bob, this leads into a segue what John was just talking about. He said it really well, that my fears were several. One was financially the money issue. So if you do your planning and talk to a financial advisor, you can get your finances in order. Annuities are projected by your personnel office, so highly recommend you get the annuity projection. And then if you've done your expense sheet of everything you spend from 1 year to the next and do that a couple years before you retire, then then you can see sort of where you are financially. So that was a fear. The second one was, am I going to be busy enough? And this is the fear my mother had for me when I retired, that once, because she does bridge, she does church group, she's 85 years old, been retired 25 years, and hasn't been bored one day, basically. So when she told me that, I said, no, I'm going to plan to volunteer. Vern and I both are members of a board of a local training organization for federal training, that federal trainers, that keeps us busy. Last year, I helped a political campaign. I was treasurer for a person running for the Virginia State Legislature, so that kept me very busy to do all his financial stuff that you would do as a working for a campaign committee. And then as John really said, it's that personal relationships. Again, me as a big extrovert, while I didn't like the commuting, most people have to feel wanted and cared for wherever they are. And work is such a big part of most of your life, for most of us, 30 to 40 years, whether you're in one firm or several, that caring to be special, to feel wanted. And when you come into the office, people depend on you to help help do the work. I think that was the big thing for me, which is why then I went back into work, because I missed that personal relationships, that I made a difference for someone.
Yeah, I think my fears were, would I have enough income to live on? That's one of the first things you think about. And then, of course, once you make that leap, you also have the fear, what if I calculate it wrong? But, what if I can't be retired? Well, you can't go back once you say you sign those papers and you leave. And then, of course, what happens if unexpected expenses come up? Those are all, I think, general fears that people have to live with and to analyze. So, yeah, it's my wife is retired from federal government as well. Like John's wife, I think she left 14 days after she was eligible, and has never looked back with regret of any kind. She enjoys retirement. She does things on the side, volunteering with the local hospital. She gets into genealogy now and scrapbooking. That's her big thing. So she loves retirement.
Okay, what would you say was this is going to sound awful, your biggest mistake or biggest accomplishment in planning for a retirement?
I think my biggest mistake was that I didn't get into retirement planning soon enough. I looked at the NITP course, I sat in on the sessions, and I just said, I'm not ready for retirement, so therefore I don't really need to take this all seriously. And then one day I came into work and I woke up and found out that I do need to start planning on this, and I started then looking into investments and doing what I needed to do to be ready for retirement. And I think that was my biggest regret, that I didn't start sooner. I had to do a lot of catch-up time. My accomplishment was that I did retire. Before retirement, I did take the 3-day planning course, sat it on myself, the whole thing, didn't waver any. But then I was able to plan a program. And what I would recommend to those out there listening is to take this 3-day planning course. And then as part of that, sit down and do a sheet on whether with all your expenses and all your income, what your expected expenses will be, what your expected income will be, and then live on that budget for 6 months before you actually retire. Know that you can do it when you actually walk out the front door.
I like that one, but I've been negligent as always in not announcing the phone number. And Ann reminded me, our phone number is 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's 10:25 Eastern Time, September 20th. Don't call us after 10:58. Eastern Time, AM, September 20th, because we will not be here. But you can email us, and we'll do the email in a little bit. I like that last, and we'll get back to getting real about retirement dollars. Bob, your greatest mistake, if you will, and your greatest accomplishment in the planning process.
The accomplishment was I thought I planned financially very well, only because of what Vern said, that for the last 2 years, I literally kept track of every single thing I spent money on, even for that latte at Starbucks. The people don't understand, I don't think, where you fritter away $5 here, $5 there, it adds up. Bringing your lunches to work helps, or are you spending money at work for lunches? All of these things can be a big expense. And again, talking to friends who had retired, they would tell me, Bob, some of your expenses will go up. Yes, some do go down, like commuting costs, unless you're going to work again, or clothing, things like that. But some expenses do go up. If you're home, as Vern said, he would like to travel a lot when he retired, so your travel budget will perhaps go up by X dollars. So I think my biggest accomplishment was financially I was ready. Now, the one mistake I think I did in planning is I didn't realize that when we federal government folks retire, we get X amount of annual leave per year. I believe it's 240 hours you can accumulate in a leave year, especially if you've been over 15 years with the government. And then some people have the use or lose. What I should have done differently is that last year in government service to basically take no leave. So I was already in the use or lose of my 208 hours in my bank. And the government, of course, pays you whatever your hourly rate is, that leave when you retire. And because this is important, because even though people warn me when you get your annuity check for the first 1 to 3 months, it's not the whole thing until the government actually figures out what you're going to get in your true annuity. So therefore, your income for those first few months is not the same. And after, I think it was the second paycheck or maybe the first paycheck after I retired, I received that whole lump sum of all my annual leave that I had saved up and had not used. So for me, if I had not taken that annual leave that last year before I retired, that would have been added to my use or lose. That would have been probably, you know, who knows, and a few thousand, maybe $10,000 more dollars, which again, as Vern has pointed out, in this economy, that helps you survive if you haven't had your full annuity yet until a few months. It allows you to take maybe that dream trip to reward yourself for serving the government for X number of years. And it helps you perhaps save more. So that whole system of the government being kind enough to pay us for any annual leave we have left when we retire, that was my mistake. I went ahead and used my leave my last year, the 6 weeks I got per year, and I wish I had changed and saved all that and had that bigger paycheck at the end.
Okay, and now we're not teetering, we're into getting real about retirement income. And I think this is probably a very hard thing for people to do. A number of years ago, we made a presentation at a national conference, and it was called Get Real About Retirement Dollars. And we actually started from the reverse. Forget the income. What are your expenses? Like, for instance, okay, this is, and be real about it. And yeah, I'm going to save some money on commuting, but there's nobody probably listening or sitting in the room that when they were working spent more money on the weekend than what they did during the week. It's because they had more time to spend it. And now, in theory, they're going to have more time to spend it in retirement. And Bob, like you say, the travel budget, I mean, if there is an expense item that's high, it's travel. And so you say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to spend this on food, if I have a mortgage, if I have real estate taxes, if I have rent, whatever it is, and just say, okay, this is what it's going to take just to pay the annual bills. Never mind holiday presents, never mind occasional roof repairs or a new car, or things like that, and say, that's what I need to spend. Now, where is it going to come from? And that's somewhat hard now. With years ago with CSRS, it was a little easier. Because that's where it was coming from, right, in the CSRS mm-hmm. annuity. But with regards to FERS, it's the proverbial three-legged stool, mm-hmm. and there is an annuity, it's a nice annuity, there is Social Security, and there's the thrift. But then they have this thing called taxes. And you can't spend what you make. You can only spend what you bring home. And hopefully you don't spend all of that. And so, and you know, I don't need to know numbers, and I don't mean need to be nosy, but how did you work with that? Did you sit down and be that analytical with it?
Well, I actually...
I bet you did, Vern.
Well, I did. I sat down when I said I did my worksheet. I actually took a 3x5 booklet, one of those little notepads, and I carried it with me. So if I stopped to get a newspaper, I put it down in the book. You know, I'm saying, because sometimes you come home and say, I had $20 when I left here this morning, and now I have a dollar and a half. What did I spend $18.50 on? And I said, if I'm going to get hold of this thing, I've got to find out what I'm spending my money on. When I did retire, I sort of made the mistake. I was still going out to lunch every day like I was doing at work. And that got expensive real fast. And I said, okay, I got to cut back on that. So, yeah, it was a learning experience as you retire, that you can't do the same exact things that you did when you were working. The income is less. So, yeah, you got to watch what you spend.
I got to say something, Vern. I remember you on the course, and I was nervous, actually. and I said, he's in there, and he's going to gig us or whatever, or is he going to help us? I mean, you much more helped us than ever gigged us. But you were really planning for retirement.
Yes, I was. And I remember when I interviewed you to come in and teach at the agency, I made the comment, if I don't like what you teach, do I have to pay you? And you said, you thought about it for a minute. I think you were shocked. And you said, yeah, you don't have to pay me. I said, okay. Well, there was never a payment missed. So we liked what you taught.
And we like working. And we still work there.
Yeah.
Bob?
Like Vern, very anal about my expenses and true about my income, and just wrote down everything. I concur with what Vern's talked about. And actually, I think almost everyone out there listening probably needs assistance on this. In other words, we can figure it out for ourselves. But again, if you have a sounding board, and actually, Bob, you were my sounding board when I took NITP course. I actually caught you after class, told you my scenario, my marital status, if I had kids, what my annuity would be, what's going to happen. And you looked at me and just from an observer point of view said, Bob, you're in pretty good shape, I believe. So, and you were true to your word, which was good for me. But actually, I think people need to take someone from the outside, whether it's a financial advisor, whether it's a friend, because they may see something you have missed. And I think that's the key. You really got to do your homework to see if you are real about your retirement expenses and income. Yeah. I think that's the key.
That's the hard part. Many people just aren't.
That's right.
You got to be real because it's a fixed thing unless you supplement it with work after retirement. Now, we have a... I'd say a fan of the show, and I believe he's done in California, and he mailed in this, I believe, Saturday. And I'm not asking you in particular, but maybe in general. Is long-term care insurance a priority in retirement? I mean, this could involve John as well. You don't have to say whether you have it or not. It's none of my business.
Well, it depends.
Okay.
Long-term care insurance is recommended by most financial planners because it's designed to protect your assets from being eaten up by very expensive long-term care. The average cost of a nursing home, and this is average, can be higher depending on where you live or lower. It's about $70,000 a year. So you can see at $70,000 per year, it can eat up, you know, your TSP account, your other investments, whatever you have, rather quickly. And then you go on Medicaid. But I got it as a gift to my children because my mother-in-law doesn't have it and couldn't qualify for it and needs it. Is in long-term care almost 24/7 and would that she could have long-term care insurance, because when her money runs out, it's going to be Medicaid if she manages to outlive her money. So and my wife is her only child. So, you know, that's why we both got it. long-term care wasn't on our radar screen until the government introduced the federal plan. And I think they did a lot of people a great service. Now, anecdotally, I don't think that many federal employees have long-term care. And I, when I'm at a seminar, I'll say how many have long-term care, either with a federal plan or some other way, privately. And very few raise their hands. And far more hands should go up. Not everyone. For example, I've talked to people and discussed it with them, and they said, I really don't think I need it. Here's why. And I ended up agreeing with them. But these were people covered under the older civil service retirement system, where, you know, if you're in long-term care, you're not spending any money. You're not going out. You're not, your car's probably sold. You're pretty much either you're in the nursing home or you're in maybe assisted living, if you're lucky, or you're homebound. And you have professionals come. Anyway, what are you going to spend that CERS pension on? Nothing but your long-term care expenses, probably. And so if you've got a $70,000 CSR, $70,000 annual CSRS annuity, chances are you can pretty much fund 100% of your long-term care. Now, if you have other assets you would like to pass on to someone, and you're worried about even eating into any of it, well, maybe you get a very small policy that costs very little. What I tell people in class, whether they're FERS or CERS classes, is take your CERS pension into account. If you're FERS, take your FERS pension and your Social Security payment. Those are going to keep coming the rest of your life. And yes, you might figure you need long-term care insurance, but you can whittle down those premiums quite a bit. Because, in other words, buy less long-term care insurance than someone else. But I'm glad I have it. As I say, it's a gift to my two children someday, and that's why I did it.
And I think I did the same thing. I mean, I thought about my family as I thought about long-term care insurance. And when the federal government first introduced it, that's when I got involved with it. Said, you know, we're living longer as a society. With modern medicine, everything we're getting now is making us live longer. So I think with everything considered, if you've got a family, you've got children, and you want to pass on some assets to them after you have to enter a nursing home or after you're gone, you want to be able to have something, and that's why both my wife and I have the long-term care insurance.
Okay. I don't, and I should. After listening to this, and just maybe a little bit, I have certainly a significant other, a wife, but no kids. And so,
don't you have a dog?
Had a dog.
Oh, you had a dog. I knew you had.
And if she has her way, well, we'll have another one before I check out, or maybe I will check out, and then she'll get the dog. I don't know. But anyway, sorry, Nancy.
And Bob, as another Bob in the room, I'm with you. I do not. Again, my financial advisor all my life has been my mother, who is fine.
We have to bring your mother in.
You're going to need her in here on your show. She listens to the show, by the way, and corrected me that when I was on your show a year ago on something I misspoke on. So I have to watch if she's listening. She has been my financial advisor, and as you pointed out, with me being single and no children, she figured I will have enough assets if I need to have a person come in at $10,000 a month and take care of me in my home. I should be okay on that. So I think the key is, as Vern and John have said, if you've got family members and you don't want to have the burden put on them, or maybe your health isn't very good. I have friends that their health, just by default, they've got health issues. And all of us hope if when we pass away from this fine earth, we just don't wake up one morning and that's it. But we all cannot guarantee that, which is why some people, I think it's situational. I agree with John. Consider what your financial situation is, what you may or may not have as a burden on your family members. But, yeah, it's one of those issues. I think you need to think about it. very clearly and then make that decision. But for me, I found in talking with my mother that I think I will be okay even if when I get older and if I need that help.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got to also consider the caregiver. Caring for someone in long-term care that needs long-term care is very stressful, both physically and mentally.
I saw my father, my stepmother, take care of my father in his later years, and he did not have long-term care insurance. As a result, she was burdened with taking care of him at the home, and she couldn't do it all the time, especially near the end. It was a lot harder for her to assist him getting a bath and doing other everyday necessities. And, through some help of friends and family, she was able to provide that care at home until he passed.
Mm. Well, talking on the reverse side of that, again, our friend on the California coast emailed in, there were three questions, and the last one I might have to take is finally, does the panel believe that putting 50% of your nest egg in equities is a good idea, or is an annuity a better alternative? I'll take that. You all can jump in if you like, but in concept, equities will do better than inflation. And as a famous financial planner once said on the show, Bob, inflation doesn't stop at retirement's door. I'll just never forget that. So just because you're retired doesn't mean you don't have to not keep pace, but you have to outpace inflation. Question is, well, what type of equities then do you put it in? Now, again, if I knew that, I wouldn't be on the air. So the equities might be very safe. Should it be some international now? Until we get back in gear, you can't very well time the market. Or do you buy an annuity? Now, that's a really tough question because, you know, what's an annuity? It's kind of like, what kind of car do you want to buy? I don't know, Buick, Honda, BMW, Chevette. They still sell used Chevettes or whatever. So annuities are not all created equal. Annuities can be based on what the stock market does. Annuities can be based on a guaranteed rate of return, but be very careful about those annuities because it might say we guarantee you 6%, but that's only if X, Y, and Z happens. And generally speaking, the more somebody will promise you in an annuity, maybe the lesser quality of the company. It's not always the case, but it is some. If somebody says we're going to guarantee you 6 or 7% in an interest rate environment of 2 or 3%, you'd have to say, where's it going to come from? And if it doesn't come, then the value of that annuity may, in fact, be less than what you think it's going
to be. Well, speaking of inflation and annuities, as we're now talking about, if you buy an annuity through with your TSP account, you sell it to MetLife is what happens, that annuity is not indexed to inflation. Mm-hmm. And inflation is the worst enemy of retirees. It's not taxes. It's inflation.
No question.
And since the TSP, I can't speak for other annuities. We'll have financial planners on frequently on this show to explain all that. But what I can explain TSP annuities, and over time, the purchasing power of that TSP annuity is going to erode once we get back to inflation, annual inflation, as we will. If not this year, probably next. So it's the inflation is coming back, and that's what probably is going to steer me away from a TSP annuity. I haven't spent any of my TSP money yet because I haven't figured out what I want to buy. So, when I do, I probably won't purchase an annuity unless we get back to hyperinflation, because one of the things that drives the amount of the TSP annuity is the interest rate in the month you purchase the annuity. Now, interest rates are really low right now, comparatively low.
Interest rates in general are low, but I think they peg it at a little bit over 3%.
Well, in May it was 3.75. I haven't looked recently, but I don't think it's gone up any much, if at all. And it's relatively low. Now, if we ever got back to 12% inflation like happened in the late 70s, early 80s, then I might it might attract my attention. But
or buy 30-year treasuries. Anyway, let's talk about annuities just so that the listening audience isn't confused. You get a base annuity if you work for Uncle, whether you're FERS or CSRS, and that base annuity is based on your years in service and your highest compensation. the annuity that we're talking about is, let's call it a purchased annuity, where you're taking funds of your own and, quote, buying a flow of dollars for the rest of your life. Could have a survivor's annuity as well, and you can do it through the TSP, and historically it's been with MetLife. I don't know if the contract is soon to be let or not, but they've had it since day one. So you give MetLife a certain amount of dollars, or and then they ask you a question, how old you are, and then they'll tell you how much they'll pay, or you can go to TSP's website, which will give you the same answer.
Yeah, they have a calculator there that everybody should be using, not just to assess annuities, but other ways to see where they are vis-a-vis the thrift savings plan someday. We should add, or I should add, that there are other withdrawal options, several other withdrawal choices with the TSP other than annuity.
Okay, let me come back to one thing on the annuity. You can have a COLA with the annuity, but you have to buy the COLA rider. So if you were promised to get X dollars before any discussion of COLAs, survivor's annuity, lump sum cash value, et cetera, when you sign the first rider, the COLA rider, that X will become less than X. Why? You're going to take a step back so that they can make up for the fact that, in reality, inflation is going to go up from here. I have a good story, and I'll do it quick. If I've done it before to the listening audience, I apologize. It happened about 11 years ago. Individual's an engineer, very good managing their money, called up and said, I'm leaving. And I said, yeah, I know. But just by curiosity, what are you going to do with the thrift? Put it in an IRA and play with it? And the response was, no, I'm going to buy the MetLife annuity. Now, my response, not being a financial planner, was, why would you do that? It only pays about 7.3% interest. Who was wrong? Me. This person is still in fine health and probably smiling at that comment that day. I think he called me up every so often and reminded me of that. But anyway, so John, you're right on target. If interest rates rise, it becomes a whole lot more attractive than it does now. And you don't have to buy it now. You can buy it in retirement.
What you're talking about, I think, in purchasing a COLA rider is called the increasing term annuity.
Mm-hmm.
But you start out with much lower payments than level payments, and it does take you a long time to pass typically the payments you would have gotten if you just had taken the level payments. So there's, you pay a pretty penny for that. Now, if you're bound to just have to purchase an annuity, the younger you are, if I were, purchasing at my early 60s, maybe mid 60s or younger, I would do increasing term. As I age, I might do the level.
Okay. So I think we hit get real about retirement dollars hard. And when you do your taxes, the tax costs, do not forget state if you live in a state that has a state income tax. So the feds are going to be whatever. Remember, and don't use your marginal tax rate. Do what's called an average rate. Take your total income and divide it into the total tax, and you'll find it to be a lot more smaller percentage than what you pay tax on the next dollar with. All righty. Staying busy, y'all. How do you stay busy? I think you've already mentioned that you teach, you're involved with the training officers consortium.
I do volunteer work as well at the hospital. That's something I wanted to give back. I wanted to give back some time. So periodically I go work at the hospital and I do training for them. And I also help discharge the patients. So you'd like to keep your mind active, keep your body active.
I didn't know that. That's very nice, the hospital thing, Bob, you just work, right?
No. I still travel to a new place every year somewhere in the world. That's been my treat since I retired, so that's always a nice treat for me. But that being said, as Vern and I both are with the training group and work with them, a lot of work to do with them each month for our federal trainers out there. And as I mentioned, I worked last year on the campaign as a treasurer for a person running for office. So I learned about how state politics work, vice federal politics. So it was a learning experience for me. Tough job, but you've got to do all this reporting. But it was a really good job because I learned a lot.
Yeah, are you one and done with that?
I am one and done, yes. So
I'm one and done with that myself.
It was been there, done that type of thing on my bucket list, and it's done. And then volunteer again. I think that's key. And then now that I've gotten this second or this other job that I'm working with this contractor, that's got me back into the workaday world. Yes, I still hate the commute 4 days a week, but I keep saying it's only 4 days, not a whole month. And they are paying me for it. So that helps supplement my income. So you have to stay busy. I think that's key. But staying busy for one person may be different for another. So however you want to plan that busyness, you do need to keep busy on various things.
I was going to say, if the commute drives you crazy, now I know where you're trained, so there's no hotels around there that you would want to stay in.
Well, actually, I trained the training facilities up near the University of Maryland. So,
oh,
and see, in the morning, of course, I can leave when I want. So really, there's no traffic in the morning. I can control when I get to the training facility. So that's pretty good. It's when we get out at 4 o'clock to 4:30. I just simply relax in my car, listen to music, and I'll get home whenever I get home. There's no point to stress about it. Yeah. It is what it is. But, yeah, it's only those four afternoons for me.
All righty. What would you say was your biggest surprise once you did retire that you didn't anticipate, or you anticipated it but you didn't think it would be as profound as it was?
I'll start. My biggest surprise about retirement is how time flies. I actually didn't think that would be possible, to be honest. I mean, I can't believe it's been 2.5 years that for myself I've retired. And when Vern told me it's been 10 for him, because Vern and I worked together many years at DOD together, I was shocked it was 10 years for Vern. So even for me, my little retirement, because I'm so busy with so many things to do, I didn't think that was possible, because for some of us, you think you're just going to retire, sit at home, read the paper. And yes, do I get 8-9 hours sleep? Some days, yes. I relax. And it may be noon before my day gets going. And then I go to the gym, run my errands, and then it's dinner time. Then I'm out with friends. So I was shocked how time flies. But the key is, time flying when you're retired, for me, has been a lot more relaxed because I get more sleep. Like I said, I'm off a couple medications since retirement. My doctor was shocked. He said, what have you been doing? And I said, I retired. And he laughed. And he said, well, I don't need you on two of your medications now. One was a blood pressure pill. So physically, for me, being retired has been better. And I can go to my health club in a time period where no one else is there, no traffic to get there and back, because my day isn't tied up in a 7-to-6 job with the government anymore. So that was my biggest surprise.
Any negative surprises?
Actually, I honestly can say there are no negative surprises. I've looked at this very positively. I just can't think. When you gave me the question to come onto the show, I tried to think of something negative, and honestly, other than initially when I didn't work, I did miss the people. Because as I said, I'm a very big extrovert. Like most people, I've got to feel I'm wanted and that whatever I do in life helps other people. So yeah, that first year, the negative was I miss seeing my friends at work. No matter how much the commute is bad, no matter how much you get taskers at work and something that was due yesterday and the pressure of jobs, the people still made the difference. So for me, very few negatives.
I think when I retired, I thought, well, here I'm going to have all this free time. I've got loads of free time on my hand because I'm not working 8 hours a day. So all of a sudden, after that first maybe 3 to 4 months, when I felt I was, hey, I'm on vacation, and then now I'm off vacation, what am I going to do? All of a sudden, my time started getting eaten up. I was busier now than I was when I was working. I mean, I just got so many activities going on. I'm moving around all the time, going on vacations, traveling. I like to think that I'm a role model for retirees. You know, that, hey, this is what you can achieve after you've worked for the government for 30 or 40 years. You now can go, you know, vacations, enjoy life, sit back, relax. But I'm busy. I stay busy.
John?
I was like Bob. I was amazed at how time flies in retirement when I was working full-time, which was a long, long time. It didn't fly by. But it's amazing. And another thing that was, then this is, I found really neat. Early on, you know, I'd say, what day is it? And I'd go look at the paper to see if it was Wednesday, Tuesday, or whatever. I knew when it was a weekend because my wife was home. But there would be days I literally would get up and not know what, have to think, what day is it today? And often, as I said, refer to the paper to find out. And that felt so good. That is such a neat feeling where you're not saying, well, it's Tuesday or Wednesday and I got to do this, I got to do that. As I got into, you know, back into the working mode, and what I do is very, very part-time. That hasn't happened as much, but time just flies by, which is, that's the scary part for me, is how quickly time flies. I've been retired 8 years, and boy, you know, you'll say, gee, it was just Christmas, and, you know, and it, you know, and that sort of thing. So that surprised me a lot.
Actually, John, I will tell you, we agree on this. The staff, when I left my last DOD job, when I retired, one of the gifts they gave me was a day clock. So just to tell me, it doesn't have any time on it, but it goes around and does the days of the week. And it's in my kitchen, so it will tell me which day it is. I thought that was a superb gift, and it's exactly what you're talking about.
Or subscribe to your local newspaper. That works too.
I'm not retired, and I often don't know what day it is. All righty. Vern, Bob, advice for people getting ready to retire. We'll close out with that.
I think I would have to tell you to plan. I mean, really, the planning is the whole aspect of getting ready for retirement. That if you haven't taken the 3-day planning for retirement course, find your call NITP and say, hey, how can I get in your next course? It's well worth the time that you spend. In most agencies, you can bring your spouse. So, you know, you can bring, you know, both of you can go to the same workshop, and there's a lot to be gained out of that. And then also look at your investments, talk with your financial planner. It's really necessary.
Four items, recommendations. As Vern says, prepare, just plan and prepare financially, mentally. Talk to others who are in retirement. That is your best. Listen to radio shows like this, talk to others in retirement. Read books. There's a lot of books out there on retirement people have made. And lastly, use websites. There are a lot of good websites out there on pre-retirement, retirement, even AARP is an excellent source. So the information on the internet, since books become out of date before they're even published these days, the internet gives you the best advice, I think, out there that you can do.
You know, on the planning the income side on the web, on the TSP, they have the ballpark estimate for if you want to skim it and get a good idea. If you want to really drill down, the ballpark estimate page has an ARP. And that takes a little bit more, but it really gets into, okay, let's get real about this stuff. And for those of you that are saying, what's NITP and how can I get in touch with them? NITPINC.com. NITPINC.com. And what are we? We retired 28 years, 100% federal retirement, mid-career, beginning career, retirement refresher course, and we don't sell anything other than the seminar. So that's about it, John.
Yeah, definitely attend one of our seminars before you retire. It's amazing what you don't know, and you don't know what you don't know.
All right, and Ann says she agrees with everything that she's heard.
Everything.
Vern, great to see you. Thanks for coming.
I appreciate you offering to have me.
Bob, same thing.
Thank you.
And I'm getting the high sign from Julie, and we'll see you all next week with Mike Causey. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.